This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes and Mike Johnson. It's a rarity. The O-Dog's been off for a couple of weeks. He's off for another couple of weeks, and he's willing to accept our call, which any other radio host in North America, in the world, you would expect if you reach out to them and say, hey, do you want to come on your own show? They'd be like, yeah, I can make that work. I mean, not all the time. Sometimes you're traveling. Sometimes you've got family commitments. Maybe you're on the golf course or whatever. But at some point, you're going to make it work, right, if you're off for a month. I don't think we've ever had him on in the summer at any point.
Really?
Yeah, because he's like, nah, can't do it.
You can't squeeze it in?
Nah, can't find the time. I'm like, well, we got 15 hours in the week, man. You tell us what works. We'll squeeze you in for a minute at 6:54 on Friday.
It's a way to be busy 4 to 7 every single week.
Yeah, just can't make it work for, 2 months here between that that window. That's just a bad window for me. But I guess he's willing to make an exception, and he's got his big golf match tomorrow. And I guess he and Duffy were out at Osprey earlier today and working on their games. And I don't know how the two of them are going to get along, because a couple of weeks ago, the three of us were getting at it, and it was kind of Duffy and I teaming up on O. And I thought that was going to be the end of the road for O-Dog and Duffy and golf.
But the healing power of sports, bro.
Yep, there you go.
The healing power of sports, mending fences. And we'll talk to him. We'll see. It's not even so much about how they hit the ball, but how they get along. Do they make each other better, or do they start sniping at each other? That will be entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
We watch this? Can we watch this live at all?
I don't think
it's streaming anywhere.
I think it'll be online. I feel like maybe the golf course is going to be giving some sort of update. I'd be surprised if they didn't have cameras out there, and there'll be some like 30 for 30 afterwards where, O throws Duffy into the lake or something. But Dubas and Jerry D, that'll be the bigger story, is if Dubas and Jerry don't work it out. I mean, they're competitive guys. Who's to say that Dubas doesn't start melting on Jerry D and Jerry doesn't start, chirping him about the cap situation with the Leafs, and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose.
Listen,
on the back nine.
Jerry's a comedian and he's super funny, but he's got a sports background and he's coached. Like, he's a competitor when it comes to athletics. So he's not going to roll over and think, I'm the funny man here. He's there to win. So
absolutely,
you're right. There could be some fireworks in both corners.
The only thing I hope for is whoever wins, show more excitement than Dustin Johnson showed yesterday.
Great point. So that's the first, I've watched a lot of the golf tuning in. It's the first one I've watched the actual closing putt and the closing few holes live. And it was the first time in all the sports I've watched, and I tune into UFC every Saturday night, and I've seen some Bundesliga, and I've watched different things along the way, where I'm like, that felt really different, felt hollow and empty, and lacked something that it normally doesn't. And whether it's Mackenzie Hughes down the stretch making bomb putts and just not no sound whatsoever, or Dustin Johnson tapping in from 3 inches and just
It was embarrassing. It was actually embarrassing how low that energy was. And there's a part of me that appreciates it. This guy, maybe he's got so much energy. He's like, this is nothing for me. You think I care about winning the Travelers? Like, I'm not going to show
not
any
even
excitement
worth getting
here.
Excited.
Yeah, this is not.
He would have made a good
waste
pick
of my
for
time.
The all-time championship team we had going a couple weeks ago with O.
Yeah, he would have been a good pick.
I wonder who picked him.
Did you pick him up?
There's your answer.
The Travelers is not a major tournament, but it's a good start. And he's a great player. Like, he is a great player. But he knew he had a two-putt to win that tournament. And he taps it in, and he showed no emotion. Nothing.
Zero. Like, did he
that
smile?
Looked like it was a practice round. He didn't smile. He just started walking towards his caddy and complaining about the read on the first putt. And he sits there and does an interview afterwards with Amanda Balionis, and she's more jacked up. She's like, hey, congrats. How great is this? You got the streak going. You've won every year you've been on tour. Mm-hmm. And he's like, can we wrap this up? Like, I got to go. I got to leave here. And it's just, it was low energy Jeb Bush-esque by Dustin Johnson. And I get that the crowd isn't there, but you got to play up to the camera. right? Like, you can't win a championship and make that kind of money and skyrocket up the world rankings and the FedEx rankings the way he did on Sunday with one putt and not even smirk. Like, how is that humanly possible?
Apparently you can.
He's a robot.
Maybe that's a testament to how good he is in that, like, for him winning, not to diminish the Travelers, but any tournament but a major or a Ryder Cup event or the Players down in Sawgrass, you know, one of the absolute marquee events, World Golf Championship, it doesn't really get them going the same way that those other ones do. And without the fans to kind of bring it out of you or, you know, having to make a shot to win it where you're like, you know, drive down the middle, 370 yards, just a bomb on 18.
Yeah, and then, that was, you know, wild.
Flip to 10 feet and two putt. It was just so matter of fact that maybe it didn't drum up any emotion in him. But it was one of my notes here. Like, it was the first thing I'd seen where I was like, ooh, that was. And I don't know how you fix it. You can't pump in crowd noise to golf because, like, that would be ridiculous.
No, you can't.
I don't think.
I don't need it either. Honestly, I've enjoyed watching golf. Like, I don't need the fans to be into it. I would like it. I think it would advance or enhance the viewing experience. So I'm all for it, and I hope they're there in the future. They will be at some point. But Dustin Johnson, like, that was robotic. That was, yeah. I don't know if he does anything, even if there is a crowd. Like, that was a matter-of-fact practice round tap-in to win, like, $1 million and move up the world rankings. And
you get more excited on your $2 Nassau at the end of the day with
easily
your buddies than he got excited
easily
for the million bucks he just made there.
I tap in for par in a tough hole, and I'm smirking, at least. This guy wins a championship. He doesn't even care. All right, here he is. This is big. This is a historic moment. He's off, but he's willing to come on. He's got a big match tomorrow. I guess he was working out with Duthie earlier today up at TPC Osprey Valley. I think that's what it's still called. Here's the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. What'd you make of Johnson yesterday? How embarrassing was that?
I was watching it. I'm like, can you just do something for me to say, like, good job? It was just, he was like, and I know that's his mojo, right? I think the only time I've ever seen him flustered, Brian, was at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, where he choked it away, and he started slapping it all over the yard. But that was just—he didn't even like act like he was frustrated. But that was so bizarre and so anticlimactic. You're like, okay, is he going to pull his tee shot? Is he going to push it? He rips it down the middle, and he has 70 yards for his approach shot. He flips a wedge on the green, two putts. And he's just like, hey, thanks. See you later, everyone. Well, not everyone. There was nobody there. But it was the most bizarre ending. It was like he went to the store and grabbed a Diet Coke. Like, that was the whole experience. I'm like, that's so weird.
Yeah. Winning a title. Winning a championship. Yeah. It's the Travelers. It's not the Masters. But
I mean,
it's still
Mackenzie
a tournament
Hughes,
on tour.
I think he made a birdie putt on 17 like a snake.
Big fist pump.
Yeah,
yes.
And he was like the Tiger fist pump. Dustin Johnson wins the tournament. He's like, I need to get out of here, and I need to get out of here now. And it was bizarre to watch.
Yeah, it was so weird, man. It was like a tap-in, and like he asked his playing partner, he's like, do you want me to mark this? I'll just tap it. He taps it in, and then he starts carving up his caddy for the misread on the first putt. As if that's relevant at all. He had a two-putt to win.
Oh,
who cares,
man,
about the first one?
I know. And he's just, he's got the walk to begin with. I mean, I don't think anybody, maybe Koepka's got a better strut than that, but it's just like, this guy waltzes along the golf course like he's just at the Sherway Gardens, and he's got the tight pants on, and it's just, I'm the you-know-what, and I'm going to rip it 350 down the middle and see what happens. And it's just, I don't know. He's a different dude. I just wish the end. I was like, my reaction was, I guess I'm turning the TV off now.
Yeah, that's it for that.
Why would I care? He doesn't care.
You almost wonder.
Yeah. You don't like care. I don't care. I guess.
Yeah, like the athlete's got to give something back, even though there's nobody there. Like, he knows sponsors, viewers, whoever. Like, they want to see him act excited, give somebody something.
Yeah. The only thing I can give him is maybe he was actually like, he started hitting some goofy shots coming down the stretch, so maybe he even said it, although there's no fans, the nerves still get you, and maybe he was like somewhat of a relief, where he's like, I'm glad that's over with, because maybe if we went a couple more holes. He got one of the biggest breaks I've ever seen in golf, by the way, when he hits the hybrid off 16 tee It's going in the water and plugs on a downhill. It was unreal that that ball stayed alive.
Yeah, I can't believe that. And then he kind of chopped up the wedge like with his feet in the water, but it didn't matter.
Ultimately, if the ball went in the water, he probably would have dropped there anyway for three, and he would have made four, but it was just an incredible break.
Yeah, that was a huge break. And I will say, to his credit, I guess, although even though he said it, I don't know if I believe it, there could not be a worse time for an hour rain delay when you're in the lead of a tournament with four holes to go. Like, you got to sit there for an hour, and you're like, how am I going to choke this away? And he's got a history of doing that at some tournaments. But anyway, how's it? You were out there playing with Duthie today. Like, what's going on here? I haven't spoken to you about this. And the whole TPC and Dubas and Jerry D, they were sniffing around looking for some material on you and Duthie. I said, nope, not happening. You guys figure it out on your own. But how are you feeling about this?
I feel pretty good. I had a great start to my round today. I was 5-under after 7 holes. I made three birdies and an eagle, and I was 5-under after 7. I was thinking to myself, because amateur players, regardless of your handicap, when you start going deep like that, it gets in your head. You're like, am I going to actually shoot like 64 here? And I just made some dumb bogeys on the back. I ultimately shot 2-under par, but it was a good practice round.
Wow.
Duthie shot 76. I shot 70. So I think we're in pretty good form heading into tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good track.
Forward tees? Duthie was 76. That's impressive.
Yeah, we played the blue tees, which is like one back from the whites, which is not a joke, but it was the man.
You're playing tomorrow?
I mean,
yeah, you're good. That's where I live. I live on the blues. I'm proud to say that, man. I say that with confidence. Duthie does too.
You guys have alternate shots in different like formats during the round at some point. Did you guys go through who's hitting which tee ball in which hole?
Well, the only thing Duthie said to me, it's like he just came up with this. He's like, alternate shot or like best ball or whatever. And, you know, I think it's alternate shot from the best tee. He's like, even if you're like 20 yards behind me, I think I want you hitting the approach shots. I'm like, are you not confident? If you're 100 yards away, you want me to hit a 130-yard knockdown 9-iron instead of you hitting a wedge? But that's the lack of competitiveness in my partner. He's already afraid, and he's already coming up with gimmicky choking-type scenarios like that. So I was a little bit nervous about that kind of comment. But, you know,
that'll
we'll
be good, man.
Yeah,
you guys will be good. Yeah, it's going to be a fun event tomorrow. We're looking
by the way,
forward
Jerry
to hearing
D's
about
a stick. Like, Jerry D plays competitive golf.
Yeah.
Apparently, he gambles his ass off up at the National. Like, he likes to gamble. And so he's not afraid of anything. So he scares me a little bit. Kyle, who in the hell? He doesn't have any time to hit a golf ball, so I think he's probably crap. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
What if Kyle walks in and he's just, like, ridiculously good? One of those ones where, like, why don't you work harder? Why are you playing so much time playing golf? Like, shouldn't you be working? You should be working harder. You can't be this good.
Well, I got a feeling he's got, like, you know, the way Kyle operates and the way he thinks about things. I think he's got, like, he's probably going to have some Bryson DeChambeau to him where he's going to be like, what's the axis of the air? like, what's the launch angle of this club? I need to get the stats on how far my 8-iron goes. I think he's going to have some DeChambeau in him, so we'll have to. I'll have to rip him about that if that goes on the golf course.
Well, listen, man, DeChambeau, he is going to connect over 4 rounds and
I know,
dummy,
but
dummy
he,
the
is
field.
Is he turning into a circus-type event where you go and pay a guy to see you watch a guy hit it 370 yards, or is it going to translate into wins? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, we'll find out.
God, he is massive. Like, he's not just, like, put on some, like, he's got a little bit of a paunch, too. Like, he is beefed up.
Yeah. Oh, he's launching balls, man, and he's still, like, you look at his, I believe since they've returned, the 3 weekends, he's, like, running away from the field, even with Berger doing what he's been doing, and, you know, a couple of guys have had, you know, 3 quality weekends in a row. DeChambeau's on the leaderboard every week.
Yeah, he is a legit, he's already won 5 times. But
right.
He's a legit competitor. You know that 16th hole, the 17th hole in Hartford yesterday, it's like it was a dog leg right with you just lay up and then hit over the water?
Yeah.
It's 420 yards, and he ripped it on the green in the practice round. I mean, this guy is not kidding around. I mean, it's a different angle. It probably wouldn't be 420, but he took his driver out in the practice round, and he ripped it on the green.
Yeah, that's gross, man. Like, that is a different level of cheddar off the tees, man. He is he's bombing it, and he's got a complete game. Like you said, he's won before, so he's capable of doing that. Yeah. He gets a short game going. He gets his putter going. He could lap a field. I could see that.
I like him because it looks like he's swinging out of his shoes now. Like on the tee, he looks like he is just going for broke every single time.
Yeah, that's not Fred Couples just cruising.
I'll tell you what, I would rather four putt every green than putt like him. I wouldn't do that. No way. I don't care if it works or not. He looks like a loser.
Well, he putts like he tees off, man. He's got the stiff arms and it's up in the front foot.
If I saw that guy in the putting green, I'd be like, I'll bet you $100 a hole putting like that.
Yeah, that guy sucks. And meanwhile, somehow he's put it together.
He's a 30 handicap and he cannot putt for the life of him, and he would rinse you.
Well, he's played Cobras. He's got a Puma deal. Also, he doesn't look the part. He looks like a guy that sucks, like, quite frankly.
Yeah, he does. He's got the goofy hat and the stupid putting stance. I would be like, any kind of money you want, let's play for it right now, today.
Yeah.
And you would get your ass handed to you.
So, Johnny and I, we disagree. That's shocking, I'm sure, to hear. But on the NHL draft lottery, the way it played out, I think that was goofy that Lafreniere's the guy who's going first, and we don't know where he's going. And I think it would have been kind of cool if that was the second or third pick, one of these play-in teams. But the first pick, that's the whole promotion, man. You gotta watch the lottery to see who gets the top guy, and we don't know who it is.
Yeah,
there's
a couple different elements, and I know in our business, Brian, you got to pick a side and have a strong stance on it. It was an awkward ordeal. I mean, it was anticlimactic. He gets to the end, and it's like, is this a team yet to be determined? You're like, what the hell did I just watch right now? But I will tell you, it's going to send a message to teams. You might as well not even tank. You might as well try to be good and win some hockey games, because it's this. You saw Buffalo a couple years ago with the McDavid draft. They did everything in their power. Somebody made a save, trade. Somebody scored a goal, traded him because they wanted McDavid, and they didn't get him. And even Murray, after, he was pissed, man. He was getting Jack Eichel, and he was like, why the hell did I drive up here for this? And he was pissed. Remember those comments he made?
He just carved
that was a joke.
Eichel.
We should have got McDavid. Why did I drive up here?
Yeah. Well, and it was one of those moves, like an hour later, his PR guy had to, like, respond. He's like, oh, but we still love Jack Eichel. It's like,
ridiculous.
You're so mad that you have Eichel.
I heard Carlo on this morning, and he brought up another good point. It does develop some interest for the NHL. It's getting some chatter out there. Although this COVID test and the positive tests are kind of taking over the news cycle, which is, I think, concerning for everybody involved in the NHL. But, you know, there's now some kind of excitement. Although goofy or not, people are going to be talking about who's going to win it. And now there's all kinds of talk, like if you're Montreal, if you don't think you're going to beat Pittsburgh, just tank it. I don't know. Who knows? But I guess any kind of talk about the National Hockey League, Brian, when there's not a whole lot of it right now except for the COVID stuff, I guess could be some kind of a positive. It was an awkward ordeal, though, for Bill Daly to be. And, I mean, the percentages, do you even know what the percentages of that happening were? It had to have been, like, what, 2%? Or what the hell was it?
That's a good question. I mean, Johnny, I
think it was. I think it's closer to 20% when you lump all eight teams together. One of those eight teams, they're all like 2.5% each. But, listen, no such thing as bad publicity. And now, you have to tune in for the sequel in September when those teams lose out. You're like, okay, now we finally find out who gets the number one pick overall. But Hub City's coming down the line. Do you care, in any way, shape, or form if Toronto gets it or not?
Well, I care because if the Quizmaster calls me and I got to do a hit about a Leaf game, I just drive down the road. That's where I care. But I don't really care where it is. I think the players kind of care. Why, I don't know. It's not like you can go out and, you know, people, I heard from a bunch of different people that the players care about the city and they have, you know, wants and needs about a city. Why, I don't know. It's like you're going away. It's like football players in training camp. They go to some dorm at a university and they're locked in there and you're not doing anything. So it's, I don't know. These guys think they're sneaking out to go to the Croc Rock on a Wednesday night. I mean, they're not going anywhere. So I don't know why they care where the city is. And then somebody said to me, well, it's better to be in Toronto than Edmonton or Winnipeg or something. I'm like, why? What the hell's the difference? You're not going anywhere. But I did hear that they're going to keep the teams in the East, and that is a positive thing.
That's
going
the way it
forward.
Should be. Yeah,
no,
that's the way it should be.
That other garbage was overthinking. It was nonsense, and I'm glad. But I'll tell you what, Bobby tweeted it today. If these tests keep coming in positive and coming in hot like they are, I think it'll be awfully difficult to be doing anything as far as phase four goes.
Yeah, I mean that was always going to be a hurdle waiting for us, right? Like COVID wasn't going to just disappear. And you look at, I think the PGA's handled it very well, but it's a totally different context. I mean, that's an individual sport. As of now, none of the big dogs have pulled out when they've been atop the leaderboard. Like Koepka didn't play. Webb Simpson pulled out after winning, you know, a week later. That's significant. But at some point, it's going to happen to the tour where some guy after 36 holes is going to wake up and not feel well, and he's going to be in the lead, and then he's going to think, what do I do here? Do I just battle through because I think I can win this, or do I have to go get a test? That's when it'll truly be challenged. This is different being a team sport, but COVID was always going to be there. My concern, when it comes to what Bobby Mack was tweeting today, is it feels like it's more about the economics. Like they're working on a new CBA. And the players want certainties with escrow and with the economics in the future. And I said, Artemi Panarin's the first guy to come out. Panarin is the Blake Snell of the NHL. He basically said, I'm not doing anything, and we shouldn't do anything until we're guaranteed our money. And it feels like we're where baseball was, and it hasn't been public because guys haven't been popping off on Twitch or on Instagram or on Facebook Live. But Panarin decided to go public, and that opened my eyes. I'm like, okay, that's the concern. Are they going to be able to come together and work out a new CBA? And based on Bettman's history, difficult to be optimistic.
Yeah, I think there's a group of players, Brian, just hearing whispers and talking to different people. I think there's a group of players. I think Ryan Kessler came out and had some comments. Yep. I think there's some guys, there's some comments, and there's some kind of snowball effect of players that are not really down with this right now, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where it goes, but I don't know. I was kind of optimistic. I thought it was kind of a standard procedure. Okay, this is going down. This is when it's happening. We're going to get to it. But I don't know. It seems like there's a bunch of hurdles right now, and I'm getting kind of more pessimistic. I still think it might happen, but I'm getting more pessimistic day by day, to be honest with you.
Me too.
And as far as a tour guy, can you imagine, like, you're a kid, like that kid that was on the leaderboard this weekend from, I don't know where he was, a young kid. Imagine him. He's in the lead. He's got a chance to secure a card, and he wakes up, and he's not really feeling too hot. What the hell do you do? His whole career could be on the line, $1.5 million paycheck, and he's gonna sink it to say, you know what, I better get tested or whatever. That would be an interesting call if you're somebody on the bubble. Phil or anybody else who's got $100 million in the bank, they don't care.
Right.
But for a guy with their livelihoods at stake, there would be some big time decision making.
That's where I think that's a legitimate conversation. I mean,
he might raise some eyebrows if he shows up with a CCM helmet with a full visor on in the first tee.
He's got the hazmat suit on.
And he's just like, I'm just trying to be cautious.
Safety first.
Just throwing darts. The guy's in a hazmat
suit.
An
old XL7 with a full cage on, and he's just dialed in on the first tee.
I love it. It's the sport of etiquette, right? Like you're supposed to penalize yourself, and in this particular case, you get tested when you show up, but they're not testing on Fridays and Saturdays unless you request a test. And I think that's a reasonable expectation in the future. Some guy with his life on the line is going to be two shots off the lead thinking, man, I got the sniffles. I don't feel great, but what do I do here? Like, what am I supposed to do?
If I was his caddy, I would say, you shut your mouth. You don't have anything.
I think, honestly, like, people won't want to hear that, but that's real life, you know?
And they could talk themselves into it, like, just stay away from everyone, keep your distance. On a golf course, you could probably get away with it, really, and not really probably infect anyone. You could probably convince yourself it wasn't that big of a risk.
Right. Or I'm not actually sick. I'm not feeling great. I didn't have a great sleep or whatever. Like, it's one thing for Koepka and Simpson to be like, all right, we're out. We'll see you in a couple weeks. But, you know, not everyone's in the same situation.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll leave it there. Are you back on the Pats bandwagon now with Cam in New England, or what's the deal there? Are you Pats fan?
I thought I made it very clear to you. I am a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan through and through.
I forgot. My bad. Okay. Bucks for life. I love
it. Go Bucks, go. LFG Brady. Let's go.
All right. Take care of Duffy tomorrow. We want updates. What's the deal here? Are they going to have, like, cameras out there and stuff, a 30 for 30 at some point? Or,
dude, that's the frightening thing, Brian. Like, I can hit it around. Like, I was 500 today after seven holes. But there's always something in my head where I'm a bit of a head case where I'm like, I could cold top it off the first tee, like, no problem. Like, you know what I mean? I could shoot 90 tomorrow for fun. Like, it's just that kind of – it's just – Like, I was a pro athlete, but not a pro golfer, man. It's just a different nervousness. Like, I played an amateur event, like, for nothing. It's just an amateur event. And I'd literally wall squat induced on the first tee, and it never stopped the whole day.
Yeah, I know, man. When you're keeping track and people are watching you is paying attention, it's a very different story.
I was
story.
The person in Tim Hortons all over the course, just everywhere. Just yep. Saying, take that. Like, well, there you go.
What time's tee off tomorrow?
8:30.
Oh, all right, man. Right, we'll be tracking early. It. We'll know what happens by 4 p.m. tomorrow. We'll have a winner.
And, okay, buddy.
Good luck,
Johnny. Good talking to you, Hazy. I miss you, buddy. Good.
Yeah,
talking
you too,
to
buddy. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
There all right, is. Call, bye.
The O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest because the showroom is open. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland or buy online at MapleToyota.com. So the O-Dog and James Duthie taking on Kyle Dubas and Jerry D tomorrow. And that's going to be fun. I'm assuming they're going to be mic'd up. And
yeah.
Yeah,
it'd be
like
great.
It's a you tough know, course too, man.
You know
it's
what? The, well, not according to O, 500 through 7, but maybe the most interesting part about this is we know O. I mean, listen, that's what makes O amazing is that he lets you know him, right? You know James. He's been on TV forever. He's funny. He's been out there. He writes books. You know who he is. You almost know Jerry D a little bit because, again, he's a comedian. His television show is, you know, he does a lot of things. Do we know Kyle Dubas very well?
I don't know.
I mean, I know Kyle to say hello, but I don't know him. Like, I don't know what his personality is like. Seems like he's pretty fun-loving, pretty bright, pretty with it, young, kind of cool guy.
Easy guy to like. Yeah, very easy guy to like.
But what I think that's what we'll learn tomorrow. What's Kyle Dubas like? Like, yeah. We got 5 hours of him interacting with three characters that are will draw him out, and it'll be interesting and fun to kind of watch him go through the day with those guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think you're right about the way you break that down. I mean, we know James and O personally. Like, they're our buddies, they're our colleagues. We've been working with them for years. Jerry D, I've had on the show multiple times in studio.
I know Jerry D. Our kids play volleyball together. He lives two blocks away.
Yeah. You know him well, and better than I do, but you know, I think I've got a read on Jerry.
Yeah.
You know, with Kyle, it is a bit of a different story because, you know, to be fair to him, he's got they've all got unique jobs. They've all got very unique jobs. But his job is probably the most unique and most rare, being, you know, one of 31 in the whole world as an NHL GM in the biggest hockey market in the world. So we'll see. What Kyle brings tomorrow. We don't know what kind of game he plays either.
I hope he's really good, too, just to irritate everyone. Like, really? You're 30 years old, you're the GM of the Leafs, and you're a three handicapper, you know, just little tiny guys hitting just bombs. That would be frustratingly good.
That always drives me crazy, man, when you see guys that just put it all together. Like, I always bring back Verlander, Justin Verlander. He's married to Kate Upton. He's got $180 million in the bank. He's a scratch golfer. He's won Cy Youngs. I think he won an MVP in Detroit. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's got a World Series, although I guess it's tarnished now, but hey, the ring is the ring. And this guy, again, with all that package, the guy puts together a scratch handicap. So he probably plays like 15 times a year, and he's
just
like,
got it.
He's just got it.
Got it.
Yeah, he's a combined like three over in 15 rounds a year. just drives you crazy. But thanks again to the O-Dog for joining us. Again, a rarity in the summer. Usually when he's off, he can be tough to track down, but we got him. So we'll get into the Jays and what we think is going to happen and how the city will react, the province, the country, and how this is all going to work out. With Mike Johnson, I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Now, back to Overdrive.
All right, we'll get into the NBA just after 6 o'clock. Their schedule was unveiled over the weekend. The Raptors, they've got 8 games left of the regular season. We know they're getting to the playoffs. Will they hold off Boston for that 2 seed?
Pretty
I guess we'll find out.
Significant that they do, Brian.
Yeah.
Like, they could get, well, who knows, Philadelphia might pass Indy, but like they could get Philly in the first round if they don't.
Yep. Oh, you want that 2 seed.
You don't want any part of that. You want the Brooklyn Nets or the Orlando Magic. That's who you're comfortable with, and you will win that series for sure.
Yeah, that's what's on the line. Yeah, that's what's on the line. And they've got a difficult schedule with 8 games to go, but I don't know what those are going to look like. And I actually appreciate that they're playing more games to kind of build up and get back into the swing of things as opposed to what the NHL's doing, and they're going to play, I think, 2 exhibition games, and then you're right into –
basically do or die outside of those eight top seed teams who are going to play the round robin and have to wait to get to that point.
It might be one exhibition game.
Might be. Actually. So there you go. Yeah. Might just be one exhibition game, and then it's on, and you're playing for your life. And the NBA, you're going to be able to build back up. And the Raptors are playing the Lakers when they come back. But I don't know what LeBron is going to look like. I don't know what, you know, any of these guys are going to look like opening night, let alone those first eight regular season games. And right. They've got a buffer on the Celtics. As long as they go, I think, 4-4, they're in the two seed. Even maybe 3-5 will get you there. So I feel good about where the Raptors are at. And they're already down there in Florida, right? They're the guinea pig, essentially, for the whole hub city in the bubble, because
right.
They're already in it. Every other team is in their respective market. And the Raptors are down in Florida already.
See how they react to, an additional couple weeks in a hotel. But I wonder how tight they're bubbling. If that's gonna, I'm going to turn that into a verb. But how restrictive is it for them? We know Florida's a gong show right now, like cases exploding. To be safe, are they staying at their resort and just kind of hanging out, or are they bubbling like right down to we eat every meal in the conference room with just us, or are they going out to the local restaurant because they can? I'm not sure which way they want to go with it, but I think the Raps are in good shape. I think it's important too for basketball, and I was thinking about this because an ugly basketball game looks really different from a good one. More so than an ugly hockey game might look different than a good one. So if guys are rusty and it's choppy and they can't shoot and there's no flow, and it's awful when it's it's going to be an 86-82 game in basketball.
Yeah.
In hockey, you could play a great game, have a 2-1. You could play a choppy exhibition-style game, it could be 2-1. And the result kind of looks the same. And unless you watch really closely, you more just care about the result. You're not really worried about how they get there. We might be concerned with that, but general fans might not be so concerned with it. So the idea that the NHL can get closer to what their normal game looks like faster is probably accurate.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I do think in terms of what the NBA is going to be dealing with here, without fans, we're all going to be dealing with that. I do wonder about like smack talk in the NBA. And how
language,
effective
language
being
a
big part of it.
Have you sat on the, like,
hear, like, let's be honest, there's like N-bombs thrown around from time to time. Like, there's a lot of language that gets thrown around, and you're like, okay, that I don't know
that
about that,
strong.
But the mics didn't pick it up because there's 20,000 people yelling and screaming, and they're playing music and everything. But I was thinking about just, smack talk, and this is going to have more of a feel of kind of like a scrimmage or kind of like playing 3-on-3 with your buddies. It's not. It'd be 5-on-5. It's a true NBA game with refs and everything. But with the crowd, you can, even if you hear it, you can play the role of I didn't hear it and walk away. And maybe the guy who was talking smack to you may actually believe it. Like, I'm not getting to him because he can't hear me. It's too crazy in here. Forget it. I'm moving on.
Right.
That's not going to happen. Like, you will be able to hear everyone that talks. Like, you think of a guy like Patrick Beverley. You think of there's a handful of guys that are going to be there. More
James Harden, Russ Westbrook, they get after you.
They get
Chris
after
Paul,
you.
Like, the best players in the world get after you.
Yes, and there's no hiding from it.
No, and it's amazing on multiple levels. One, that you're in the NBA and somehow you're going to be bothered by trash talk. Like, I was not drawn into that very much in hockey, but there were guys who, Ryan Kesler would lean down the bench, and Ryan Reeves doesn't, it doesn't bother you. You're not going to throw you off your game. And yet in the NBA, all the best players almost do it and think that somehow either gives them an edge and fires them up for challenging another good player, or maybe throws that other player off, which seems so strange that you would be Steph Curry or LeBron James, and someone's going to say, you're going to miss that shot. It's going to somehow resonate deeply enough to you that it might affect you. But proof is in the pudding. They do it, so it must be working on some level for somebody.
What's the etiquette and the protocol for a free throw? Like, if you're playing a game on the road, everyone is yelling and screaming. Everyone behind the basket has some sign that they're waving.
Right.
And as far as I know, you can talk. So, like, an opposing player can sit there at the line and talk smack while you're shooting a free throw. And it may not matter. It may not make a difference because, A, you're a pro, but, B, everyone else is yelling and screaming at you, so you kind of lock it in. If it's one guy, you're sitting there, you're at the line, you need to hit this free throw to tie the game, fourth quarter, you know, 30 Ooh. Seconds to go, and some guy's in your ear while you're yeah. in the process of shooting, is that allowed? Like, I guess it is.
I hope so.
I'm assuming it is.
It's the reason why golfers don't like noise. It's not because they're bothered by the noise. It's they're bothered by the one-off noise.
Right.
They're expecting silence, and they don't get it. No, like, we're not bothered on a penalty shot in the NHL when there's 20,000 people screaming because you're used to it. If it was one person out of the blue screaming, it probably would rattle you a little bit. But I hope, and it's going to be a fine line to toe because the language is extremely colorful. Yeah. I'm being
on the ice
when I
too.
Say that.
On the ice on the too. Field of play, the football no, field.
I mean, there's one word that's said a lot in basketball games. Yep. It's never said in hockey anymore.
Right.
And I don't know in the current climate of the world. If, like, I don't know how that goes. I don't know how that will go over. But I want to hear everything. I want to hear all the conversation. I want to see the challenges, the swear, all of it. But I don't know if you can put all of that on.
But I don't know how you can hide
channels.
It. I don't know if you can hide it. The only like I kind of get the impression
you'd have to have
like,
a massive delay and a massive buzzer,
You're not going to be able to do that, though, because you're relying on someone to pick up everything and be listening so closely. I just don't know if that's possible. I get the impression like networks are going to have multiple feeds. Well, let's say it's TSN. Yeah. On TSN 1 and 2, you will hear the raw feed. Like, there's no one in there. You're just picking up the mics and the play-by-play and the color guy.
Yeah.
And on TSN 4 and 5, it'll be with artificial sound. And the you know, bleeding in of fans and music
right.
and muffling the sound of the rawness of the court or the ice or whatever.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Give us the option. I would
like that. I would appreciate that. I've made it very clear. I'm all for the artificial sound. That's what I want, but I wouldn't mind checking out the other one from time to time. I would like to have the option to experience both. So I hope that these networks do it, but I do think that is going to be a legitimate conversation the league and the broadcasting partners are going to have with the players.
Like, with the players.
We're going to catch everything here. And it's one thing you drop a couple F-bombs or an S-bomb. People kind of know that going in. If it goes too far one way or the other, that's a very different story. But in terms of just, you know, trying to get in some guy's head, I got to believe it is open season and it has the potential to be way more effective without fans. Like, way more effective. If one guy is on you the whole night and you're hearing everything, like, crisp. Like, you hear every enunciation
like
of every word. A conversation.
Yes.
The guy doesn't shut up the whole game. And it's just ringing out throughout the whole gym. Like, that's got to be aggravating. And
that's Patrick Beverley. Like,
that's
exactly
who it is.
He does it so close in your ear during the regular game when you can barely hear him.
He's on arguably the best team in the league. So
he's a good player at playing defense and frustrating. It's not like he's just talking nonsense and can't back it up. He kind of brings the heat when he plays.
Right. And he'll be out there with Kawhi. You won't hear a word from Kawhi.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Like, Kawhi's not going to say a word. He's not going to say
anything.
You
got me kind of excited, though. Like, I'm excited to watch that. Something different, something we don't get to see when we watch on TV. And you don't even get to experience. I mean, really, if you're not in the first four rows of an NBA game, that you don't get because there's so much else going on in the arena with the music and the dancing and the lights and the mascots and everything else. You don't know it, but to experience that right down there, it's a fascinating. It's another world, we will have people have their eyes opened to what life is like on the court. It'll be amazing.
Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN will join us in about 20 minutes, get his take on the Raptors' schedule, the importance of them ending up with the 2 seed, how he feels about, you know, the bubble and if we're going to get there, right? Like, they're supposed to be going into it, I believe, in just over a week. And we'll see what Kevin has to say. Bob McKenzie at 6:25. Bobby Mack with a plethora of tweets, very informative about what's going on between the NHL and the PA and them trying to work out a lot of details, let alone the hub cities. And it sounds like it's going to be Toronto and Vegas, but until it's locked in, we don't know. So
one question for Bob. Bob, what's the latest? And he'll go 30 minutes because there's so much going on because on so many different levels.
So we'll catch up with Bob at 6:25. You don't want to miss that. We'll get Bob to break down all the tweets and all the info. We'll get to that. And we'll touch on the Jays and the news we're expecting. Yeah. We think they're going to get the green light to not only have, you know, spring training or summer training, whatever we're calling this, for the next couple of weeks, but also play and host games at the Rogers Center throughout August and September. We'll touch on that next.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Let that boy breathe. Make it pop.
All right, this segment brought to you by Lease Busters. Lease Busters will get you out of your car lease today. It's as easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit leasebusters.com. So it sounds like the Jays are just waiting to return to Toronto, and they're going to come back, and at the very least, they're going to have, you know, summer training here over the next couple of weeks and likely stay at the Dome and stay at the hotel, which is connected, obviously, to the Rogers Center, and allow them to kind of quarantine within the bubble and still work out. And I'm sure that is doable. But beyond that, nothing is official yet. I guess the federal government's going to have to sign off on the idea of the Blue Jays actually playing games here, which means teams from the states are coming up, right? Like the Yankees are coming up,
right?
Yeah.
So I think people, in an effort to find normalcy and also understanding that, you know, athletes in their jobs will have access to testing at a far greater clip, not taking away from the public, but providing their own testing that doesn't affect the public health and safety, and so that they can stay together and not really pose much of a risk to the general public, to themselves perhaps, but to the general public, not likely. And I think that's why they're okay with the idea of a hub city here, because all those guys will be off on their own and they won't really get around you if they are in the city. And that's why they'd be okay with the Jays having their summer training camp here as well, because you can literally go from your room to the elevator down to the field. Like, that's how it works at the Dome. So, but what I don't think people will be okay with, and I don't see how you get around it, is teams coming in here. Because the whole idea is that when the teams go through, when the hockey teams get up here for the hub, wherever they go, they'll be tested every day. And for 2 weeks, which is the quarantine period, they will not leave the bubble. Maybe afterwards they test every day and they're testing negative. They might be able to walk around in the streets because that's like a general citizen.
Like anyone else.
But for 2 weeks, they will go through the protocol that they have to go through, that everybody has to go through while getting tested, and will not put anyone at risk. That's not going to happen for baseball players. They come in for a 3 or 4 game series. They're not here for 2 weeks. They're here for 96 hours. And how is that going to work? Are they also going to stay in the Dome Hotel?
Well,
how are they going to get back and forth? They won't all stay in their rooms. We know that. So this is where it becomes way stickier. And I think I read that Ford seems to be okay with it, waiting for the federal government to sign off. But it's different. It's not the same as the Jays having their camp here or the NHL having hub cities here. Not because I like hockey more than baseball. It's because they don't have the timeline to follow the rules when teams are coming in and out.
Well, there's a lot to break down here. Furthermore, the hub city, the important element of it is when the teams get here, they're not going back to Florida and then coming up again.
Yeah.
Right? They're not going down to New York and then 2 weeks later coming back. That's out. Like, once they get here, they're here. So this is a totally different situation because you're dealing with teams flying in from New York, Tampa flying in from Tampa, right? Like, they're going to be playing teams in the East. So Miami's going to be coming up here. Philly's going to be coming up here. The Mets are going to be coming up here. So it's a totally different situation. I think what has to happen here is, if it's going to get to this point, and I think it will, because peer pressure is a you-know-what, and I think the Canadian government's going to be like, we don't want to be the only one that doesn't allow it. Everyone else is allowing it. Every other jurisdiction, whether it's the city, the state, the country, whatever, I think peer pressure and this idea of being inclusive will factor into their decision to allow for it. And they may look at it as a sign of weakness if they don't. I would say
it would factor into Vancouver's.
I would say it would be a sign of strength.
Said no.
It would be a sign of strength if the federal government came out and said, no, you're not playing here.
Yes.
That would say we're putting the our Canadian people in front of a sports league or a 60-game season. But I think they're going to look at it the opposite way and say it would be a sign of weakness by not allowing it, so they're going to let it happen. But what they better do is they better tell Major League Baseball and the Blue Jays and the nine other teams that are going to come up here that wrap up the AL East and the NL East, if we find out one infraction, you're out. Like that better come with a serious message from Trudeau, Ford, Tory. In other words, if the Yankees fly up and we catch Aaron Judge at Trinity Bellwoods cruising around, we're done. Like it's shut down. You're out. Because you have to put together some, and I would think that should be happening really throughout baseball, right? Like you should be telling your teams, when we fly down to Tampa, boys, we're not going to the beach. Yeah. Like it's a business trip. And right. It's more so than ever before because of the circumstances and what's going on.
Can they go to restaurants? Can they? Like, that's what I want to know. Like, I get, like, don't go to the clubs or to a bar, which won't be even be open anyways. But can they go to a restaurant? Can they walk through the park? And my answer is no, because when I come back from the States, I can't.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so I don't know why you can.
And what I will say, what helps the situation right now for the Canadian government, the province, the city, is testing is not an issue anymore. Like our province is testing 25, 27, 30,000 tests a day. This is not a situation where we only have 5,000 tests, and how dare you use these up on athletes or on personnel or coaches or managers. That ship has sailed. Like people I don't think are going to be concerned about taking tests away and giving them to athletes because we're testing. Like
that's not an issue.
The testing has exploded here. That's not an issue anymore. And I think that's a big hurdle that they've probably overcome here in terms of PR. We'll pick up on this in the next hour. Bob McKenzie coming up at 6:25. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.